Welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. This podcast is for those who are committed to thriving no matter where they are on that journey. And I say journey because thriving is not about achievement. It is not a destination. It's about engagement. It's about being energized by our life. My name is Bobbi Kaler, and I'm your host. And I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or you may be considering your next career. You might be an entrepreneur or a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something's calling to you and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us so that when challenges show up, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's dive in to today's episode. Welcome back to part two of my interview with Mark Lamson. In part one, we talked about things like working from your own plan in life, staying in balance with your priorities, staying open to trying new things and exploring. And if you're going to explore, make sure you give it 100% for a season or for a cycle. And also, we talked about things like being honest with yourself about when it's time to say, you know what? I gave it my best shot. I gave it a real try. And it just isn't for me. And now, back to the interview.
I think the other thing, you know, if I'm thinking about a couple of the things that are intentional, I'll say this: nobody knows it all, and nobody likes a know-it-all.
That's right.
So when you think you're a know-it-all, and you act like that, and I'll go back to the boat. This is, I realized that. So I got lucky. Go back to luckies. This is all about. Got lucky. I got a slip, which is like a dock for where your boat sits in the water, at just a really, really good place. I just was lucky. And I guess what I'm learning in this world is people with boats act like they know it all. I know how to run the boat and I know how to do all this. And they don't, because you can't. So I started, people came and said, hey, how you doing? What's your name? Yeah, this and that, you know. And I just said, guys, I'm kind of new to boats. I'm kind of figuring that I'm kind of new to these kind of boats, these sport fishing boats, and I've done it before, but I need help. Remember the first time I invited four or five of my buddies, and I said, we're going to get on the boat? Yeah. I said, look, here's what we're going to do. You ready? We're going to leave the slip. We're going to untie six lines, leave the slip, go out here like 100 feet, turn around and dock, and we're going to do it over and over and over again. That's an intentional thing. Docking is the hardest part of boating. People would tell you, have a boat that's got a couple engines, it's real tight quarters and wind and tide, and you can do a lot of damage to yours and a lot of other boats quick. So that's an important thing. So I said, I'm going to go practice docking. And so this like crowd of people, crowd's a strong word, but all these people got around and started getting beers, like kind of half laughing at me, but kind of half saying, hey, like, that's cool, because now you're probably not going to jam up my boat like other people do. And people respond and have no one, everyone's been nothing but helpful. Let me take you out. Let me show you. It's been an incredible experience. And I'm super appreciative for all the people at Point View Marina in Snug Harbor, Rhode Island. It's about being willing to ask for help, being vulnerable.
Yeah. I remember, Mark, I think you, well, I know that you took a sabbatical, was it last year? I think it was last year. Was it 2 years
ago? Last summer.
Yeah,
last summer.
When you came back from that, you sent us all like a little email about the things that you learned from your sabbatical or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things you talked about was about your experience with the fishing and how, like, just be curious, like, just approach somebody and start asking them questions, be genuinely curious, be vulnerable. And it's just amazing what you can learn.
Like I said, nobody likes to know it all. So as soon as you think you know everything, you're you're wrong. And it's really, it's really detrimental.
Yep.
Back to the train thing. I mean, the other part that I was going to say was the train goes fast. So you're on the train or you're off the train, but the train of life goes fast. I'm feeling that more than ever. I mean, I knew it. Everyone said, hey, spend time with your kids.
Yeah.
Because they're going to go, and that's happening. My oldest has his car, so he's driving, so you just see him a lot less. And I have no regrets. I did a lot of things along the way that I was present, made games. My dad, I think the answer is just do what my dad did. That's really what I really do. Like, just what would my dad do? I just kind of follow that. It's pretty simple. But my dad was a blue-collar worker, and I played JV football on Monday afternoons at 3:20 p.m. at not the nice field, the field in the back with all sand and dirt that's kind of used for baseball and lacrosse and storing stuff and trucks. And, you know, that's where I played. And he and one or two other parents every single Monday afternoon at 3:25, and I don't know how he did it because he worked in Philadelphia and had to come across the river. It was there watching me. And at the time, at, you know, 17 years old, maybe it wasn't a big deal, but it became a big deal, and it's a big deal. And as a result, I've made it a big deal for me to my kids. And it's the same. They're not like coming over and giving me a big hug after the game and say, "Oh my God, I'm so glad you flew home and missed your meeting and came to my game." But that's okay. That's not why I do it.
No,
do it to be there, because life goes fast. You know, to me, you know, this whole success thing we talked about, the career thing is a small piece of your wheel. It's all the other stuff. Work hard and play hard. That's the other intentional thing I would say. Just work hard and play hard and be present and be there. Put your phone down. Right? So when you go to the game and watch the game, people are at the game with their phone. Like, why?
With their phone. Like, why are you at the game?
Put your phone down. Be unavailable. Someone observed that the other day. Something happened. I was with somebody. My phone had a text. And they're like, "You want to get that?" I'm like, "Get what?" They're like, "The text." Mm-hmm. I'm like, "No, I'm talking to you." He says, "You just like to be unavailable." It's not that I'm being unavailable. It's just I'm making myself present for what I'm doing right now.
Yeah. You're making yourself available for the person you're with.
Yeah. I mean, just because some other random person decided, that's not a random person, I back up. Just because somebody I know who has my cell phone number decided they want to send me the picture of their big fish they caught. And by the way, that's an important thing. You got to share fish pictures.
But that's right.
It's important. And it's important to me. It's just not important to me right now. It's just not. Just because you decided you want to send it to me has nothing to do with the person I'm with right this second.
Mm-mm. No, but we allow those to become mm-hmm. distractions and interruptions. And I think we just miss out on so much. It's like, put the phone down.
Why? Why do we do that? That's the million-dollar question. I don't know the answer. It's a rhetorical question. I'm not waiting for an answer.
Yeah. I don't know.
I told you the story. This happened the other day. It's boating, not fishing. Did I tell you this story about a guy I know? We're getting on the boat. Guy I've known for a while. He has a friend. He comes on. They start talking. You know, I said, "Oh, hey, Matt." It's Matt and Tommy. Say, "Matt. Hey, Matt, how'd you guys meet?" And Tommy, the guy I know, goes to Matt, and Matt starts talking. And he's like, "Oh, it's great stories." He's like, "It was actually on the side of the road, on the highway." He says, "I was broken down." Tommy drives by, and he sees me. And like, he's like, "Tommy, you pick it up from there, because you know what happened." And this is a very natural story that they're telling me. I'm listening. You know, things are happening on the round us, but I'm paying attention to two people talking to me. This is New England. We live in New England. He says, "Yeah, it was 4th of July weekend." And Matt said, "Yeah, it was 4th of July weekend. I broke down the side of the road." And Tommy drives by and sees me, and he pulls over. I said, "Okay, Tommy, what happened?" He's like, "Well, yeah." He says, "You know, I got on the side of the road, and all the slush was kind of spraying on the cars, and it was kind of inconvenient." I think he said one more thing, but I was confused. And I said, "Well, hold on, back up, hold on. What's this slush stuff on 4th of July in New England? Like, what are you talking about?" They start laughing. So these two guys are just kind of comedians. They kind of have this stick that they tell this story this way because what they believe is nobody's really listening. And this is a sad, this is a sad testament to our society. They have known each other for years. And they said, "We have told that story hundreds probably dozens of times, and you are the first person to ever stop and ask us about slush in New England in the 4th of July.
Yeah.
And I look at that and say, well, I'm not really after an award as much as I'm after, like, oh my God, what are people doing? What are you paying attention to?
Yeah. Did they not hear it, or did they choose not to ask?
They had to hear it. These are two big guys that have loud voices. I don't know, Bobby, whether they heard it and don't care, didn't really listen, don't want to be vulnerable and say,
wait a minute.
I know I sound dumb, but I think you said there was slush in New England in the 4th of July. I don't know, Bobby. You know, I know there's books about don't sweat the small stuff, but I say, like, take in the small stuff. Look at all the little things and the sunset and the leaves. I don't know how to say this, but it's about being intentional. The intentional part is the person you're with, doing what you want, saying what you want. I'm thankful to Sean Robertson, because Sean Robertson, when we started talking, somehow we got on the conversation of, have you ever told your dad that you loved him? Now, I love my dad beyond belief, and he's the most amazing man. And I have everything in my life that I know is because of him. When I was, so we're going back, he called it 8 years, I was 42 years old. And my dad was whatever, you know, 70. I had not told him that I loved him. I've not sat down. I probably said it when I was a little kid, right? But not said those words. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a generational thing. You know, we don't really hug, shake hands, whatever. Put that aside. So it took me a while, but I and this is ridiculous, but it worked up the courage. It's the wrong word, but I just found the right time. This is, Dad, I want you to know I'm so proud of you and I love you. He didn't know what to do. He kind of mumbled back some kind of like, you know, let's get a beer. I mean, kind of thing. And I wasn't looking. I'm not asking him. I know he loves me by his actions. But I said that. And so I would encourage people to be intentional about those things, to what you want to tell people. You know, when we took our first trip after our son was born with Tyra and I by ourselves, we were leaving. It was a big thing. We did all the things you're supposed to do, get life insurance, all that stuff, you know, right? It's a big deal when you leave your kid for the first time away, right? I don't mean just like up the street to dinner. I mean, like, you go away on a cruise for a week. And so we have guardians, and we have guardians who are going to take care of, you know, if something happened to us. And it wasn't my parents, it was friends. And I literally wrote him a letter. And I said, I want to write these things, because if something that happens to us, I want you to teach and tell and show my kids these things. This is what's important to me. That's intentional. That's just saying, this is important to me, and I'm going to try to share that. Now, whether they listen or not, that's up to them. But at least I'm not going to get through life and tell my dad I didn't love him, or not tell my dad I loved him, or not tell my kids what's important.
Right. I mean, I'm so curious, Mark. Do you remember what was in the letter?
Yes, I do. It's in my, you know, computer. I mean, it's in my, and it's, I mean, I saved it. Come on, Bobby. I mean, you want to go to my, it's on my OneDrive. Why would it not be?
Oh my goodness.
You know, largely, I mean, there's a lot of personal things in there, but I think largely it's about being other-centered and thinking about others and focus on others. And that generally keeps you in better shape than most. Attitude's a choice, and that's, you know, we can't control. These are things that we're talking about. These are things happen to us, but we can't control, but we can control what we do about it. You know, I guess there's some maybe, you know, typical guy things, and I don't know if this is all PC, but I want to teach my boys to always respect women and treat everybody well and have a good firm handshake and look people in the eye and be a man of your word. And boating is important to me. And this is our guardians are boaters. And I said, you know, I want you to at least expose him to the love of the ocean and the sea and all those things. Those are things that were important to me, because I think it's got a lot of effects on you personally beyond just catching and eating fish. So, yeah, those are some things that were in there.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah, so he has it, and that's cut away, and I've never shared it with anybody. It just sits on my computer and probably his computer, because he's equally engineering-driven as I am.
There you go. I love it. Hopefully it wasn't a spreadsheet.
Know. It's not a spreadsheet because it's a letter. You know, it generally it wasn't a big list. Yeah, I went crazy. it was just a Word document problem. I know.
Okay.
I'm venturing out.
Nice. So, Mark, when you were talking about career, this is a little bit ago, you were talking about, you know, the wheel of life and how the career is such a small part of it. I kind of know this because I know your story a little bit, but it seemed like there was a time in your life when your career maybe it got out of balance somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know, been at APC, great organization, learned so much there, great people, but there got to a point where the first time I really lifted up my head, and this happens to people, right? This happens to all kinds of people. I had a kid. He was young. Lee was a year-ish or so. I called my wife. I remember being in my office, kind of getting my desk organized and email caught up. I just felt like settled. I called my wife and I said, "Hey, good news. I'm going to be home early." She's like, "Great." And I said, "See you in a few." The clock said 7 p.m. And, you know, I wasn't on a, you know, different schedule. I mean, I went in at 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Yeah, wait a second. 7 o'clock is not early."
That's not early.
And it hit me. And I started paying attention. I looked at my wheel. My wheel was totally out of balance. And I felt like I was totally out of balance. So I started thinking. And as luck would have it, back to luck, Tom Stanfield called me. I said, "What are you doing?" Said, "I'm riding on an unbalanced wheel of life." So we had hired Aslan. So we knew Aslan. I hired Aslan, knew Tom, had a few dinners with him, respected him and the organization. I got involved and did training, the training that we did for APC. I did the Aslan training. So it was an easy move and appreciative of Tom of trusting me and giving me an opportunity. But I sat back and looked and I left somewhere that I thought I would never leave. And APC ran through my blood and I love mm-hmm. the place. But I stopped and said, "As hard as this is, I'm going to leave." Not because I was unhappy and not because I couldn't get my wheel back into balance. Man, I'm not blaming anybody. That's all on me. I'm a big boy. But I just looked out and said, you know, my favorite, I left to get my life in balance, which is what kind of our culture is, focus on family over maybe your career. And I also realized I'd gotten away from my passion. My favorite time in my career was when I had the sales development inside sales team, sat down with people, listened to phone calls, took notes, coached and helped and got people in the team, got them promoted to the field and on to whatever they were doing. It was so rewarding. Mm-hmm. I had gotten completely away from that. I wasn't coaching. I ran a sales organization, but I wasn't coaching people. I wasn't talking to customers in a bunch of budget meetings, spreadsheets, strategy. I mean, I don't want to say blah, 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 blah. It's important stuff. Don't get me wrong. But that excitement and the feeling of impact was gone. And so I had an opportunity to come here. And again, another really good, fortunate, lucky thing that came to my life to be able to go train and coach people for a living, which is what, as you know, you and I still do. And it is my passion. It is my ikigai to be in this role. And my life's been balanced. And so, great. That's solved a lot of problems.
Well, and I think it's also cool that you paid attention to it. I think a lot of people, Mark, like they might feel it, but they might just kind of push it away because how do you make a change, right? It mm-hmm. was probably a little bit of a risk to make that change.
That's a huge risk. Yeah, I left a couple billion-dollar company, you know, with all the goodies and all the security, which I don't know what that really is today, but you know, corporate America. It's like it was in a good spot. And Tom, you know, kind of, you know, I know it's hard to believe. He kind of sort of oversold me on the, you know, company.
Tom. We love him.
Slightly. Yeah. Tom's not as comfortable with spreadsheets as others. No. He's more comfortable with PowerPoint, you know. Yeah. So it was a small couple people organization. But I trusted Tom with my life. I still do. And the people around us, you, and just so many good people here. And I feel so good about what we do. It was a huge risk. And my wife and I talked about it. And she said, if that's what you want to do, I want you to do that. Because you're not going to be happy being over here.
Mm-hmm.
She was right. And everybody was right. And so Yeah, so that's the biggest risk I've taken. I'm not a huge risk taker. I've gotten more, I take more risks as I get older, I think. But in general, yeah, the message to people is pay attention. It's the wheel. Pay attention to your wheel. My wife and I still sit down and do the wheel. We do our wheels. We inform each other wheels. Hey, how's your wheel? How's my wheel? Where is it? And we help each other adjust the wheel. You have to shave some off of one spoke if it's hurting another spoke.
Yeah.
Just make those choices.
How often do you guys sit down and kind of calibrate that way?
I'd say it's, I don't want to say make it sound like we have some standing meeting, but it feels like every couple of years we kind of end up at the beach, couple beers, feet in the sand, talking about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just on someone's heart. Hey, how's your wheel? That kind of thing.
Yeah. And Mark, as I listen to, your relationship with Tyra and what you said about Tom, and Tom's why I'm here. I mean, his enthusiasm for it, definitely it's persuasive but I hear you've had a lot of people in your life who have, been there for you and really, just been there.
It's hard to do life alone. Again, this is where I don't really feel in place on your podcast, Bobby, because I've had so many ridiculously fortunate things happen to me, people in my life that love, cared for me, done things for me, helped me, been nice, taught me things, whatever. There's just an endless stream of those people. And my wife is my number one fan. I met her on a boat.
You were young when you met, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was 18, which is scary. I was 18. My son's 17. He's going to
be his
wife.
Goodness. I remember you told me this story about, I think, the first time you saw her or met her or something. And yeah, I remember you were really young.
Yeah. I don't want to make this. I don't have any dating, courting, marriage advice for people. I'm a believer of love at first sight. That's what it was for me. I had maybe had a girlfriend or two or this or that, and it was always fine, but kind of thing, right? Nice people, but there's always a but. There was never really a but with Tyra. Yeah, I was leaving work on a little 12-foot aluminum boat, and she was on the back of a boat that they lived on for the summer, and a friend wanted a ride, and it took them over, and we started talking, and there you go. And that was it. We literally met. I was had my boat backed up to her boat talking. We ended up on the boardwalk. We ended up on a date to Pizza Hut. First and last time I ever cut pizza, because she was wearing a retainer. Probably going to kill me for this story. But yeah, she was wearing a retainer. And I don't know what all that means. She had to take it out, or she had to take it out, but then she couldn't eat the pizza. It would stick to the... I don't really know. All I know is here's the most basic other-centered rule. Just match other people that you love. And so we sat down to Pizza Hut and she started cutting her pizza. Well, what am I going to say? My first date, what am I going to say? Hey, that's dumb. Why are you cutting your pizza?
Right? Good move, Mark.
Exactly. So I just sit there and just cut my pizza and just eat it, because I'm not there for the pizza. We dated and we ended up here and we just stuck together and we got married. We've been married 25 years. I would just say this. I mean, love takes a lot of marriage takes a lot of things. And I don't want to focus on marriage. It's about having people around you that love you. Hopefully that happens. And sometimes we have to work at that. And sometimes there are people around that love us and we ignore them. We don't realize that they're around us. They love me. And love is a noun. People think it's a thing, right? But I think the important thing is love is a verb. And it's two ways. Mm-hmm. It's things that you do. It's things that you do to let people know that you are the most important person in my life. And it's at times when they're least expecting it. It's not the most expensive Hallmark card and roses and chocolate on Valentine's Day. And if you want to do that, that's fine. But it's about doing things that are important to them. It's about saying, for your 50th birthday, I'm going to give you 50 days of stupid gifts that are all silly and dumb because you're listening. This is what we teach, right? We teach care, learn, do. If you care about someone, you can pay attention, because to me, And I'm so grateful. My son said this the other day. He's like, well, I don't want to do this, but if you want me to, I will. He wow. said, you know, it's important to you. If it's important to me, I said, yeah, that's it. Something, if you love somebody, what's important to them is important to you, period. Mm-hmm. It's non-negotiable. I'm not asking if you like it. I'm not asking if you don't like it. It's about it's important. And so if it's important for me to boat and fish, my wife doesn't want to go offshore and fish and get queasy, but she finds ways to be involved. If it's important to her to go dance, then I'm going to go dancing. I'm not the best dancer. Not my first choice, but I'm going to go dance and yeah. not say, oh, I look dumb and dancing stupid and guys don't dance. No, that has nothing to do with your decision. Go dancing. What's important yeah. to them becomes important to you, period. But when they're around you, all this stuff we've been talking about, all these highs and lows and the wheels of life and people dying, I have no idea how I would have managed the things that come at you on a regular basis without Tyra. I just can't. I love her to death. And I try to do my best to make that a verb whenever I can.
Yeah. And I think that shows, Mark. It shows in the way that you lead. It shows in the way that you parent. I mean, you make all of those things verbs. And I know I've shared this with you, but when you were talking about leaving APC, I've met quite a few of those people, you know, over the years, because I did the Catalyst mm-hmm. training and that type of thing. Yeah. And to a person, they've all said, our worst day was the day that Mark Lamson left. And he goes, you know, happy for you guys, really sad for us. And I think it goes to what you're talking about here. You don't just say, I'm a leader. You actually lead. You care. Wow. I mean, that's who you are.
It's just a decision. That's all. It's mm-hmm. just a decision that you make to care. Yeah. By the way, when you have people around you that do the same, it's easy. So yeah. I'm talking about what I'm doing. I mean, we have been talking about organizing the garage forever. I don't know. One day, several years ago, I was away for a weekend. I think it was like Father's Day. It was like we went away for, it was like an overnight with a couple of other fathers. I said, hey, go play golf or do something, whatever. I was gone for maybe 36 hours. Bobby, I came back. The entire side of the garage had shelving installed. And this is important. There was no trucks here, contractors. Tyra went, bought the stuff at Home Depot, followed the directions, drilled all the holes, and put in probably 60 feet of shelves and gear and organized our garage while I was away. And I walk back and I walk into this garage and they're still there today and the stuff is still in there. That's ridiculous. And that's so much love. It makes you feel so good that the of all just everything. And so it's easier and more fun to reciprocate. We are more fulfilled. We are more fulfilled when we are other centered. Your mom mm-hmm. and dad said you're better to give than to receive. Period. The end. And it feels so awesome both ways.
It does. I love that. You know, it's like anyone can say things, but like, of course, you know, if you think about the love languages, I'm very much one of those, like, I like to do things for people. And that's also what I like, you know, and it's like with cooking, like I love to cook, but what my dad taught me, because I'm very much a daddy's girl. He always taught me with cooking that you don't just cook to put food on the table. You go to McDonald's and put food on yeah. the table. But he's like, yep. you put food on the table to show people that you care. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what cooking is to me. You know, yeah. it's like you create the experience and it's showing people that you care,
mm-hmm.
you know?
That's so real. I've never heard that. I don't think I can totally appreciate that. That's mm-hmm. good advice.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the lesson is. How do you put people around you that love you? But I'm surrounded by that with my family and with my work family. I mean, with, mm-hmm. with Tom Stanfield bringing me here, you know, one of the things I said this, I wanted to say that, you know, stuff happens in life and you can't control it. What you can control is what you do about it, what your response is. Tom has what we teach and what we believe and what we live. It's all the same thing. What we believe, what's true, what we believe is true, what we teach and what we try to live is all the same thing. And one of those things are choosing. Being other-centered mm-hmm. is choosing who you serve.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most intentional things I did, because Tom Stanfield told me to, that I'll be forever grateful, is making a decision where to cheat. Because we have to cheat. in our lives, we have so many things. We say yes to too many things. We have all these obligations. We have to say no, and it's hard. And sometimes we say no to the wrong things and say yes to the wrong things. I had a trip. My dad was dying of cancer. He lives in New Jersey. I live in Rhode Island. Dying of cancer is maybe a little strong. He had cancer and he was slowing down. So I would make it a point to see him as often as I could, really about every 2 weeks or less.
Wow.
When I was traveling, instead of flying back to Providence, I'd fly to Philly. And I'd spend it overnight, hang out and do something and get home the next day on the train. I had a trip coming up that had to be in Atlanta for something. And I was supposed to be in Miami for something. I was supposed to see my dad, but then something got changed. And basically I started going through my schedule, getting ready to cheat on my dad. Well, you know, if I do this and I can get to Philly at like, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning, but I got to be back like to home at like 4 o'clock. So I'll just have a couple hours. I'll just say, hey, and you know, in Tom's City, he says, cheat on Aslan, cheat on the client, cheat on anybody you want except for your dad. I'm like, you're right. And I did. And I canceled stuff and I called people. And by the way, what happened? Nothing. Everyone's like, oh, okay, that's no, totally cool. Yeah, you should totally be with your dad. And I went and I spent extra time with my dad. And that was May 15th of 2015. And that trip was the last real conversation I had with my dad, because the next phone call I got from my mom 6 days later was, I think the cancer's in your dad's brain and he's not making any sense. And I got my ass down there and I intentionally sat by his bed for 12 days until he died, which was the best and worst experience of my life. Never left his side the entire time. But the choice to cheat on whatever seemed important and, oh my God, I got to be there and I'm speaking and blah, blah, whatever. I cheated and I chose. It was the best cheat I ever did in my entire life. And so cheat. You have to cheat on things. You have to cheat somewhere. You can't do it all.
Well, and that's such a great story. I mean, it's such a beautiful story in terms of you being there with your dad and, but being, again, coming back to being intentional with where are you going to put your time and your love? You know, clients will understand.
Oh, they do. Yep. There's a void. I think that's a good way for us to lead clients is to say, I got to do this because I got to prioritize. Mm-hmm. And I hope that, and that might create an inconvenience for them. But what I hope it teaches them is this is really the right thing to do. And we should all be trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
There's a void of that.
I mean, what's important? Yeah, thank goodness you were there with your dad. You had that.
Yeah. So that happened to me. My dad died and my reaction was to revisit my time and spend time with my family and buy a boat. Again, it's back to, I know these all tie together. It's how you respond to what happens. And then my mom passed away 5 months later and my father-in-law passed away 5 months later. Like within 5 months, my kids, and I'm an only child, they lost three of their four grandparents. So we have very, very little family, but it's about, yeah, it was hard.
Yeah.
And if I'm honest, my mind had thoughts that I never thought existed. You just get dark. You just start to say like, well, what's the point? You know, I have a strong faith and that was a part to rely on my faith and the people around me. But yeah, things happen and it's how you respond. I'm appreciative of Tab. I think about all the people that love me. And I think about the leaders that we have at Aslan and they love me. And I want to say to Tab did something to me. Stuff happened. You know the story?
I think, is this the hot tub story?
It is the hot tub story.
I remember hearing part of this. This was, oh my God, years ago. But yeah, I want to hear this again.
This was not even a year into Aslan. And I had done well. I had done well in school, not so well in college, did well in the fraternity, did well at APC. Did well, performed, whatever that means. I got to Aslan, struggled. Selling this stuff is hard. And I wasn't doing what I wanted to do, but I was faking myself. Yeah, you know, I mean, be okay. I wasn't telling myself the truth. So what happened? We were at a Braves game and we came back to Tom's house and we had some bourbon and we had some cigars and we didn't have bathing suits. So we just went in our underwear. I'm not sure if this is PG-13. Is there our podcast rated? Do they have like a rating system? So. Like parental? How does that work? Does that hurt your rating?
I'm not sure yet. I've never needed to answer that question yet, Mark.
Okay. Well,
I'll do some research.
So there's me, Tom, and Tab sitting in with cigars, bourbon, in our underwear in the hot tub. Having a couple. And I say, hey, Tab. How do you think I'm doing? And without pause, and by the way, you know Tab Norris.
Oh, yeah.
He's the most friendly, agreeable, nice guy you'll ever meet.
Ever.
And he says, without even winking, he says, I'm disappointed. Holy.
From Tab.
I have not heard the words disappointed since I lied about where I spent my $5 at bowling that I spent on video games. And I lied to my mom and dad and I cried and never lied since. I felt so poorly. That was the last time I heard someone say they were disappointed in me.
Oh, my God.
So I appreciate. So that's people that love you are going to tell you the truth. That's the other thing people will do, because people who don't, it's just too much effort. Right. If they don't love you, it's just like, everything's great. Yeah, you're fine. It's just too much effort. Because no one likes conflict. And so when they say I'm disappointed, there's going to be a not conflict, but it's hard. Oh, my God, why do you think that? And he said a bunch of things. And you know what I did? You're right. I went and fixed all those things and got things turned around. And who knows if I would have still been here if he didn't say that.
Yeah. So it sounds like you were open to it hurt, I'm sure, but you were open to hearing it and adjusting.
It have to be, right? It hurts. If you're going to ask, be prepared. Seek the truth. Mm-hmm. I keep saying this is what we try to do at ASM, but we try to share. We try to say, speak the truth and speak it in love.
Yep.
Speak the truth and speak it in love. There's a truth. We run a business. There's things we have to do. There's numbers. There's results. It's just the way it is. But people's, what they do and their performance at some company has nothing to do with them as a person and their character and whether you love them or not. So all the leaders exhibit love. Scott Cassidy does the best job of loving his wife and his family of anyone I know. And he teaches me that. And I watch that. And Sandy has helped me be comfortable with being served. Her heart is enormous. The only thing bigger than her desire to serve people is her ability to do that. She runs our company. It's amazing. I'm not comfortable delegating. I'm not comfortable doing things. I'm not comfortable asking people to do things. That's kind of like lame work and I should do it. And she's totally allowed me, because she loves me, to be able to receive what she's offering and serving and helping. Surround yourself with people that love you. And I know in the business world, that seems a little sketchy. It's just true. It's just true.
Yeah. I think it's one of the things that makes Aslan special, and different. Maybe it could be more in other places too. You know what I'm saying? Like maybe you could start a revolution with it.
I hope. That's the idea. Deliver truth to the market. There's a lot of truths that we talk about. Truth's a strong word, but it's what we believe. It's what we believe is important. There's some pretty freaking messed up stuff going up in our country today, right? I mean, that's an understatement. And if you back up, it's like people just hate each other. So what happened to democracy? If you don't agree with the other person's perspective on fill in the blank, then all of a sudden we're going to hate people.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Yeah, it's a shame. It's tough. And I don't know what the prescription is, but try to love somebody else and they love somebody else. And eventually that goes viral and that becomes contagious.
That'd be a great thing to go viral. So, well, Mark, this has been great. A lot of good stuff in here. If someone wants to connect with you, what would be the best way for them to do that?
I'm an email guy. Don't send me a text because, I just
ignore it.
Right?
Yeah.
I will, if someone hears something that I can help with or provide some counsel in any way, I would love to do that. What? M. Lamson, LAMSON at AslanTraining.com.
Perfect. And we'll put that in the show notes as well. And yeah. I know we covered a lot of ground, but is there any other you know, pearl of wisdom or tidbit that you would have for someone, including your sons, let's say 10 years in the future?
Mm-hmm. I don't have some magical pearl or words of wisdom. It's just not that simple. I think it's really, I mean, the golden rule of treat others like you want to be treated. If you can follow that all the time, a lot of things tend to work out because people will help you and people will tell you the truth and they'll pick you up when you fall. Mm-hmm. And they'll love you and they'll serve you and you'll want to love and serve them. And then along the way, you're going to get connected with your goals and your mission. You're going to get connected with your faith and, you know, what you believe about life on earth and eternal life. And all those things are heavy, big topics. But to really, I think, live the intention, the decision to say, I'm going to focus on other people and to get what I want, which is a terrible thing. You have to help others get what they want, which means, you know, help others. Help mm-hmm. others, just love and help others. And I think a lot of the things we've talked about are really just about being other-centered. And I would say that the other thing that I think about, I was asked this on a podcast or a webinar the other day, I wasn't planning for it. And it was, you know, COVID's upside down and the economy's upside down and what's going on and, you know, how you feeling. My feeling is grateful. My gratefulness comes from all the blessings that I have, from all the people in my life who have given me all those blessings. And that comes from focusing on them and serving them. And when you can do that, I am unyielded, thrive. I'm super, I used to say always happy, never satisfied as a way to live life. I think my focus now is, as I get older, it's not happy versus satisfied. It's about always grateful and never mm-hmm. complacent, never complacent. I'm satisfied. You know, it's not about, it's a sin to seek more or compare. It's really about just being grateful. When you start with gratefulness and you're able to appreciate things and you can be in the moment and you can love on other people. I'm grateful for you, Bobby. You have an amazing gift that you have shared with Aslan and all of our people. And all the people that we teach and all that we train and your ability to take what we have and make it yours and just speak into people's, you know, we talk about the truths. There's mm-hmm. there's a vocational truth. Yeah, we teach people how to sell more or how to serve better or take calls or make calls or coach and all those things are important. But what you're really teaching them is how to be better people. You just do an amazing job. I'm so proud to be on the team with you. I'm so grateful. I love you, Bobby. You're one of the people around me that just have a connection and care. And it's so fun to talk to you. And I'm so interested in what's going on in Colorado. And I do want to learn how to cross country ski. That is on my list.
I'm not, I can teach you.
That's not a dream list. It's just on my list. It's not a dream list. It's not a bucket list, but it is on another spreadsheet somewhere. So,
Hopefully it's not a bad list, Mark.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me and for a chance to think about some things and to memorialize this and to, maybe have something that helps people and maybe my kids will listen to this someday. So thank you so much for having me.
You are so welcome. And thank you for your kind words. And you know how I feel about the team. I mean, I love what I do. And thank you for, you know, for being willing to, for sharing all this stuff. This was really good. So I appreciate it.
Welcome.
Welcome back to the second part of my interview with Mark Lampson. You can see why we had to make this into two segments. Here are the rest of my takeaways. Number one, be humble and be willing to learn. Sometimes that means that you have to be vulnerable and ask for help. Number two, sometimes you put the effort in now and you may not see the reward until later, but put the effort in anyway. Number three, be fully present and pay attention to those around you. It can be so easy to get distracted and to be busy. And then we find that we're not really being fully present in those moments. Number four, it's hard to do life alone. Number five, I love this one. Sometimes just be silent and cut your pizza. I loved it when Mark said, I wasn't there for the pizza. Number six, love is a verb. A beautiful illustration of that was the story about Tyra organizing the garage while he was away, which gets to Mark's point about if you love someone and it's important to them, then it becomes important to you. Number seven, surround yourself with people who love you. People who love you will tell you the truth, not to cut you down, but as a way to lift you up, which gets to one of Mark's favorite sayings, speak the truth and speak it with love. And number eight, never, ever cheat on the truly important things and the truly important people in your life. I hope that you enjoyed my conversation with Mark and that you found some valuable takeaways of your own. The new year is right around the corner, and you know what that means. It's the time for goal setting and making resolutions, and that can be a great thing. And what can be an even better thing is actually taking action towards those goals and resolutions. In having coached thousands of people in my career, I've seen a major barrier to action, and I call it the just wait voice. So what is the just wait voice? It is that annoying little voice that shows up and whispers doubt in our ear just as we are about to act. And so instead of acting on our goals, we decide to wait indefinitely. I truly, truly hate that voice, and I want to help combat it with what I've learned over the years, which is why I'm putting together a free video guide on how we can recognize if we are falling prey to it. If you want to be alerted for when it's available, please visit unyielded.net/goalkiller. Again, this has been the Unyielded Podcast, where we are committed to bringing stories and guests who can help us all live more fulfilled and authentic lives. If you have found it helpful, please consider helping us out by leaving a review on Apple, as well as sharing it with a friend, as these are the best ways to help us share this message of hope and positivity.